digo. Hello, guys. Hello.
Hi everyone. Hi from wherever you're joining us today. Welcome to Microsoft Ignite 2020 and a special welcome to today's Live Learn session. We're so glad to have you here with us today. I am Esther Indero, a program manager with Azure Core Compute, and with me is a colleague, Rishabh Verma. Hi Rishabh, how are you doing today?
Hey Esther, I'm doing very well. Hope you're well too. Welcome everybody. Very nice to be here and for this opportunity to present to you guys. We've got a fun, action-packed session packed for you. Hopefully you enjoy it as much as we will presenting it.
Thanks, Rishabh, for that short introduction. Guys, today we'll be going through creating a Windows virtual machine in Azure. This promises to be a fun and exciting session.
Thanks a lot, Esther. So what's going to be our agenda? Could you give me a little more details?
Trust me, we have a fun-packed agenda today for you guys. We'll be talking about creating a Windows virtual machine via Azure Portal. We'll be talking about configuring Windows virtual machines, network and storage settings, and we'll also be talking about using RDP to connect to Windows virtual machines.
Awesome. So Esther, for folks who are technical, they probably know a lot about virtual machines already. But for folks who are not so technical, do they need to know a lot before going into the session?
Not necessarily. Consider this as an introduction to virtual. Think hope that have knowledge with Azure Virtual Machine and Azure Portal that might come in handy.
Thanks a lot, Esther. Apologies. I think there was a little bit of network bandwidth, but for viewers, I want you to know that this is going to be a one-on-one course. We have a lot of sort of, we'll try to simplify the content as much as we can and hopefully try to address a larger larger audience. So don't worry if you don't know a lot behind the scenes and have a lot of technical knowledge. We'll make sure to answer your questions and try to keep it as sort of, bigger the audience as we can. So Esther, I
So,
understand this session is a live and interactive session. Could you maybe tell me what that exactly means?
yeah, definitely, Rishabh. This is a live and interactive session. This just shows that the session will be fun packed. So, guys, this is the point in which you go to the chat box and you say your hi and you tell us where you're coming from. We want to know where you're joining us from wherever in the world. We'd like to know that. And also, please keep the question coming. We'd like to know what your questions are. That's why we're having this session to attend to your questions. The good thing is we have moderators. These are experts in Azure and Azure Virtual Machine. Also in the chat, they would also be answering your questions. We'll be taking some pauses as we go through the session to answer or to attend to some questions. But well, all right, we're here for the questions.
Thanks a lot, Esther. Yes, yeah. As Esther said, we'll be taking pauses and looking at the teleprompter as we go. So please feel free to say your hellos, and maybe we'll give you a shout out as well.
Yeah.
So Esther, maybe you could tell me about what this session is exactly is, and a little bit about what Microsoft Learn is.
So, like I said earlier, this session is about creating a Windows virtual machine in Azure. And the good thing about Azure is we have a Microsoft document page, which details a lot of learning resources. So, the learners consider Learn a website or a page in which you go to access all of Microsoft's resources when you come to Azure. But the good thing is for this particular session, we would be narrowing down to aka.ms/learn249. That is the section of the site we would be detailing in this particular session. And this actually just details and give a step-by-step guide as to how we're going to create a Windows virtual machine in Azure.
Thanks a lot, Esther. Yeah, essentially for our viewers, we've got this wonderful documentation for you. Today, we'll just be presenting one of the learning modules. There are thousands of things to learn on Azure, and today we're going to be going over the 101. So when you have time, maybe preferably after the session, feel free to check out the Learn website as well. All right.
So, Rishab, does this picture remind you of anything?
Absolutely, yes. So this picture reminds me of my days when I was in high school and I was sitting in my college, high school library. So hopefully, you know, folks who are viewing this presentation have the curiosity that of a high school student, and hopefully we'll be able to give you some nice takeaways and learnings from this session. With that, let's go ahead and jump into our sort of introduction to virtual machines. How does that sound, Esther?
Yeah, that sounds good. Let's go right into it. That's the crux of the matter, and that's why we're here today.
Thank you.
So, Rishab, we're here because of virtual machines, right? So can you explain to us what Azure virtual machines are?
Absolutely, Esther. That's exactly why we're here. And let's sort of give a very high-level intro into folks who don't know what Azure VMs or VMs in general. What are they, right? So Azure VMs or normal VMs are sort of on-demand, scalable cloud computing resources, right? I like to sort of think of a very funny analogy is essentially what VMs are. Yeah, they are slices of the cake, where the cake is the server that's sitting in our data centers. So we tend to offer it to our customers through those smaller slices or the bigger slices, depending on your compute needs. Azure VMs specifically are kind of similar to what virtual machines are that were hosted on Windows Hyper-V back in the day. And they include, you know, just like any sort of compute resource, they include processor, memory, storage, networking, and all the good stuff that come with it. Azure VMs specifically enable you to create dedicated compute resources in minutes, right? And they can just be used as a physical desktop, a server machine, any sort of application that you may have and you want to host it on virtual networks. Azure VM lets you gives you this ability to do that.
Thanks for that information, Rishab. I get it now. So now you told me about Azure Virtual Machine, you defined that to me. How can I deploy an Azure Virtual Machine?
Fantastic. So yeah, using my terrible analogy that I use as a slice of the cake, right? So how do you eat it, right? Coming back to that, so how do we deploy Azure VMs, right? There are many ways that Azure lets you deploy its VMs. To name three particularly, we'll talk about Azure Portal today, which is basically going to be our choice. In our demo, we'll be using Azure Portal to deploy the VM. On top of that, you have the ability to deploy Azure VMs via a script or through Azure Resource Manager templates. These secondary options, second and the third option here on the slide, can be sort of useful for developers who tend to deploy VMs on a large scale set. So rather than going and deploying them manually one by one, you can maybe just write a script and let a sort of a, you know, computational script just do it for you. So lots of ways for a lot of different audiences, and hopefully we have a choice for you.
Nines, I like the sound of Azure Portal because it's so user-friendly and you really don't need to have any technical background to explore the world of Azure.
Absolutely, yes, sir.
So a question comes to mind, Rishab. I know what an Azure VM is. I know how to deploy this. But what do I get with deploying an Azure VM? What comes with a VM?
Great question, Esther. So I like to sort of think of it naively as, like, if I take a step back, I like to sort of think of it as what exactly is a VM and what comes with it, right? To answer this sort of in a very naive way, I like to think of it as a compute resources, as some sort of storage resources, and maybe a little bit of some sort of networking resources that sort of all combine towards this VM service that I use. To sort of even break it down of a little, sort of go a little more granular into it, a VM comes with, you know, the traditional CPU and memory resources. So the compute aspect. Additionally, from the storage side comes the Azure storage, which basically holds your disks, and then the virtual disk, which where your data is actually stored. And on the networking side, you've got a virtual network to connect to your VM, as well as some other Azure services that let you connect from your own on-premises hardware. You've got a network interface to communicate with your virtual network, and then finally you get a sort of an IP address access to your VM, which through which you can essentially communicate through external resources for whatever application that you may be running or using your VM for.
Wow, that's a wonderful analogy. Now I understand this so well. We have the compute side of things, we have the storage side, and we have the networking side.
Absolutely.
Okay,
yes.
So we'll be digging into this one after the other. I know what comes with my VM. The next question that comes to mind is, what's the first step? How do I go into Azure portal and create a VM?
Fantastic, Esther. So essentially, yeah, we just talked about the three pillars that go behind the scenes for a VM. Now let's sort of just jump right into it, right? How do we go about deploying the VM, right? The first thing that we absolutely have to do is select the VM image. I like to think of the VM image as the OS that maybe I'm sort of deploying my virtual desktop from. So that we've got thousands of options on Azure Marketplace. And they all sort of come with different flavors. A simple example would be a Windows Server. If you choose a Windows Server VM image, it will come with all the dependencies allowed and will let you just jump right into the VM and deploy your application. And additionally, customers have the ability to create their own custom images. If there are some specific dependencies for your workload, you have the ability to create your own image and deploy Azure VMs via it as well.
Wow, I like that. Because it's not just limited to Windows Server. You can have as many images as possible, be it Linux or your own custom-made image. That's nice to know.
Absolutely, Esther.
So, going through Azure web page, I realized there were a lot of VM sizes. I saw A series, B series, D series, and I was confused. So can you just help me and clear that confusion? And what kind of sizes should I use when I need to use a VM?
This is a great slide to be on, Esther. Essentially, a lot of my customers who I speak with ask me the same question that you just did. So we'll take a second and hopefully try to address the questions here, right? So basically, right, again, using my analogy, they're just sort of different slices of the cake, right? And we sort of market our slices of the cake, the VMs, that is, in a lot of different ways. There are bigger slices, there are smaller sizes, given that we try to sort of group them into different buckets. So allow me to just give you a walk around what these buckets really are. I'll start with the most common, right? Our general purpose bucket. The general purpose bucket consists of A series VMs, B series VMs, and D series VMs. Here we've got a flavor of AMD sizes as well as Intel sizes. They come with disk and diskless options. But essentially what the general purpose bucket is really good for is kind of like for small workloads. I like to think of them as the day-to-day use, right? Whether you have some sort of general computing, web testing requirements, small to medium databases or low to medium traffic web servers, general purpose is the way to go. Moving forward, I'll sort of touch briefly upon what our compute optimized bucket is. Our compute optimized bucket is where the F-series VMs come in. Again, these are sort of Intel run VMs, and they're sort of, I like to think of them as VMs which I'd probably choose if my workload requires a high sort of CPU resource, right? So these are useful for high computational tasks on medium web traffic servers, network appliances. I can sort of give you an example on the recent customer call I was on. We were talking about deploying web servers on F-series VMs for gaming applications. So a lot of good stuff, specifically for workloads which require a lot of CPU-intensive resources.
So, Rishab, what comes to mind is when I'm thinking of compute-optimized VM, what I should go for is the F-series, right?
Absolutely. That's the perfect takeaway, Esther.
Okay.
With that, I'll jump on to the next bucket we have, which is the memory-optimized bucket. Here we have the E-series VMs, we've got the M-series, and we've got DS and DV2 specifically as well. So the memory-optimized bucket is an interesting one, right? Like here, you can sort of deploy large memory usage, RDBMSs, medium to large caches, some good sort of, think of Redis as one of the good options, right? Like you want to do some in-memory caching. The memory-optimized VMs are sort of the ideal VM choice for such workloads. This is one of my favorite and quite interesting sort of bucket as well. Before I move on to any sort of questions on that, Esther?
Oh, no, but what comes to mind is Big data is a thing now. Everyone is saying big data in the world. Do we have VM sizes that cater to big data?
Absolutely, yes. That sort of cues me up to my next bucket, that is the storage optimized VMs, right? When I think storage optimized for Azure, I think LS and LSV2 series VMs. Essentially, they're those sort of large disk VMs that come with large disk, and they have high disk throughput and IOs as well. So any sort of workload which has a requirement for hosting a lot of sort of big data, I would sort of pick up the storage optimized L series VMs. With that, I'll move on. I'll quickly sort of touch upon the next section as well, which is our HPC sizes. Our HPC sizes are interesting, right? So they come with large sort of. Whenever I think sort of deep learning requirements, essentially GPU intensive workloads, I think of my HPC sizes, which is the N series as well as the H series. So for folks who have workloads related to that, I'd recommend our HPC sizes for them.
Oh, so when neural network comes to mind, when I'm thinking of neural network, deep learning, I'm going for the HPC sizes, right?
Absolutely, Esther. HPC sizes are the way to go.
Oh, nice. Thanks for that clarification, Michelle.
Thanks, Esther.
Michelle did justification to the first part of VM sizes or creating VM, which is the compute part. And now we'll be going to the other part, which is the second pillar, as it calls it. That's the storage configuration. So, Rishab, can you tell us what we need to know when it comes to storage configuration for Azure VM sizes?
Fantastically put, Esther. So let's jump right into the storage configuration section. So the first thing that comes with configuring your VM from a storage aspect is you got to sort of pick which type of disk technology that you want to choose, right? We've got a couple of options, and I'll sort of touch upon, I'll go a little into detail after this slide as well. But the two options that we have on a high level are whether you want to pick hard disk drive based storage, or the sort of the modern solid state drives as your options.
Rishabh, what's the difference between HDD, which is the hard disk drive, and the solid state drive?
That's a fantastic question, Esther. I like to think of this as HDD drives were sort of the a little sort of back used a little earlier than we are used to. Today, SSDs are the more prominent ones. HDD disks had sort of the spinny disks that came in our laptops and our desktops, if you may remember, and SSDs come with no moving part. The key difference here to know is it with regards to pricing as well as the input-output disk throughput. And I'll sort of just touch more upon that here on the specific types of the storage that Azure offers, based on the level that we offer it to our customers when they're launching Azure VMs, right? So the first level is, of course, as I just said, the HDD disks, right? If you have non-critical workloads with infrequent access, which don't really require high disk throughput, I would pick up the HDD disks. A sort of a benefit to them is they're sort of lower on the pricing aspect as well. Whereas if you have sort of normal workloads, which requires a little better performance, you need a higher level of disk throughput. This is where you can pick the standard SSD disks. Whereas if you have sort of, imagine you have sort of production level workloads, right? And you want to host them on Azure VMs, premium SSDs is what you want to pick up, which have the ability to give you sort of high throughput and big sort of input output as required by your workloads.
Thanks for that clarification, Rishabh. So I've been hearing a lot about C drive and D drive. I know the C drive is the operating system disk, and the D drive is the temporary disk. Can you expatiate on both?
Absolutely, Esther. So a key thing to know here is how we sort of handle storage and disks in the back end, right? We essentially tend to use something called a virtual hard disk or VHDs to represent physical disks on a VM, right? So I like to think of this as creating sort of a snapshot of a physical disk and assigning it and keeping it and storing it in a storage account. Essentially, if I may sort of just touch upon that a little more, is VHDs sort of replicate the logical format and data of a disk drive, right? And are stored as page blobs in Azure storage account. And this sort of is tied to your billing as well, depending on your use or VM or the workload that you're deploying on Azure. Right, as you beautifully put, right, we tend to sort of keep the C drive as the storage, or as the OS system disk. Right, this is where all your OS data is stored, and your operating system actually functions and sits. Whereas the temporary disk, this is where we tend to use it for storing something called Windows paging file or any sort of data that we tend to store based on either like whether you'll be using it via a VM as a desktop or some sort of workload application. We tend to use our temporary disk for storing our storage account or any sort of data that we want to store and have access to frequently.
I'm sure a couple of participants would also be thinking of this question. Let's imagine this scenario. Currently, I'm using an on-premise system, and I'm trying to migrate from on-premise to Azure Cloud, but I think I'm limited because I have a lot of data that I also want to move with me from on-premise to the cloud with me. How do I go about this? Does Azure offer the capability or the assistance with which I can move my data to the VMs I'm creating on Azure seamlessly?
Great question, Esther. And this is where exactly the virtual hard disk format comes into play, right? We have the ability to take snapshots of your physical disk and store it in our sort of page blob and storage accounts associated with your VMs. So the way to do it is by creating a snapshot using virtual hard disk drives.
Oh, that's simple.
Yep.
Okay. I know that when it comes to physical system or on-premise system, I kind of manage my storage accounts, you know? Is that the same with Azure Virtual Machines? Who manages my storage accounts in this case?
Absolutely, Esther. So we've answered sort of questions on which kind of disk that you want to use, but we sort of didn't really answer the question on who's going to be managing it, right? So Azure disks are sort of offered in two variants. One is unmanaged disk types and managed disk types. So with unmanaged disk, you're sort of responsible. It's your responsibility on how the storage account functions, which sort of holds the VHD, the snapshots of your storage data, right? And all of this is, again, as I said, your responsibility. If you need to increase the size, you have to do it manually. If you want to decrease the size, you have to do it, and you'll be billed accordingly. With managed disk on the other end, which is sort of the newer and more recommended storage model that Azure offers, they sort of the whole sort of problem or like responsibility of managing the disk is on Azure, right? You don't have to care about it. All you have to do is use your application, and if your storage needs increase, the disk size will increase according to your needs. And if your storage sort of requirements decrease, the storage size of your disk will decrease accordingly. Some of the key benefits that come with managed disk is that it improves reliability, better security. As I said, like snapshot support, in case you want to sort of restart your VM to a different size, you have the ability to just pick up the snapshot and just continue. Your data is going to be in place as it were before. And then finally, you have the ability to back up all your snapshots as you do with managed disk as well. All of these other things would be your responsibility under managed disk. So managed disk comes with a lot of benefits.
Oh, so if I'm looking at absorbing myself of any stress that comes with managing my storage disks, I would rather just go with the managed disks.
Absolutely, okay. Yes. All right, our first knowledge check, Esther.
Yeah, this is our first knowledge check. This is the part of the session that I actually like. So we want to know if participants have been following us, and if you also have questions, like we said earlier, please put them in the chat window. We have subject matter experts that would be attending to those questions, and we would also be attending to this question. Over to that first knowledge check question. Suppose you have an application running on a Windows virtual machine in Azure. What is the best practice guidance on where the app should store data files? A, the OS disk. B, the temporary disk. C, an attached data disk. There's a poll in the chat and would like to know what your answers are. Just go ahead and choose A, B, C, whatever you think the answers are.
Absolutely. And to our viewers, I encourage you to participate. Again, you don't have, we'll be sort of jumping into the demo very soon as well. You don't necessarily have to, but if you wish to, you can follow us. If not, just sit back and grab a coffee and a drink and just enjoy and learn with us. Meanwhile, we'll highly encourage you to participate in the polls as well.
Rishabh, what do you think the answer to this question is? Do you think it's V or H? What do you think?
This is a great question, Esther, and there's a lot of things to learn from this question, right? So you don't really want to sort of use the C drive, the OS disk for your data files, right? The reason why is because if there is a VM failure or a VM restart, you might lose that data. And the same goes with temporary disk as well, because every time there's a VM restart, these C drive and the D drives are essentially wiped out. So every time you want to sort of use your storage as your app data or whatever additional data, sort of personal data that you might store, you might want to use an attached disk for such uses.
Oh, the answers are here, Rishav, and our participants. Participant.
Absolutely, yes, sir. Apologies, I'm facing a little network bandwidth from your side, but yeah, you're absolutely right. Let's sort of jump on to the next one, next slide. And essentially, the answer is C, right? As I mentioned, you tend customers might want to use an attached disk whenever storing their data files, as this is something that you can take a snapshot of and utilize it if you want to sort of shut down your VM and just basically, you know, take the snapshot and carry it with you to whatever next VM that you might store it on.
Thank you, Rishabh, for that explanation. Now, we've spoken about the configuration part, we've spoken about the storage part, and now we're going to the third pillar, like you call it, third pillar, and that's the network settings. So can you tell us what do we need to know about network settings when it comes to Azure Virtual Machines?
Fantastic, Esther. Yes, as you said, we're moving on to the third pillar right before jumping into our demo. The third pillar is a wonderful sort of, we'll jump, take a deeper dive into the networking aspect related to a VM, right? So let's talk about how do we go about configuring Azure Virtual Machine network settings, right? So the key thing to know here is that VMs communicate via external resources using something called a virtual network, or VNet, as we call it. Right. When you create a new VM, you'll be basically using a VNet or an existing VNet for your region. This allows you this gateway to speak with and communicate with external resources. You can also divide them into a lot of subnets or to connect with isolated resources. And again, you know, you have the ability to connect to other networks that you may wish, and all of this can be configured via something called a network security group, or NSG, which I'll briefly touch upon. So a key thing to sort of know here would be that having Azure create the network together with the VM is simple, but it's likely not ideal for most scenarios, right? Imagine a customer or somebody who's trying to run a workload on VM might want to be it's some sort of like high level of security behind it. You want to be sort of in charge of your network settings, and you have the ability to do so by configuring it yourself rather than having Azure do so. So that should be the main takeaway here. With that, allow me to sort of elaborate a little bit more on what a network security group is. So, what is NSG, right? This is an important aspect when we're looking at the networking aspect for a VM, right? Essentially, NSGs are the main tool you use to enforce and control network traffic rules at the networking level, right? VNets are a part of it, and so are sort of, they're sort of the, this optional security layer that sit on top of your VM, but sort of protected by a firewall, as you may wish. A good way I like to think about this is using an analogy. I think I recently read there online somewhere that I like to sort of think of the network security group as so a virtual network as a house, right? And each house has different rooms, and each room is something I like to think of as a subnet. And the access to each room is what's controlled by a network security group. So VNet is the house, small rooms are the subnets, and NSGs are essentially which room does the user have access to, right? So that could be a good way to think about these complex resources.
Wow, I love the analogy, Rishabh. For non-tech guru like me, that just puts context to this particular subject, which is the network security group. And the good thing about Azure is you can always configure your settings the best way you want to configure it. You can give access to whoever you want to give access to, and you can deny access whenever you want to deny access. So
Absolutely, yes, sir. With that, I'll jump into sort of a little more into what a network security group rules are. So NSG rules allow you to, allow or deny traffic moving through the network. As I said, like using my analogy, they essentially stop you from going into a room of the house or not. You can give the keys who you think is a trusted user, or you can sort of, just deny access to folks who you might not know and might not want to let. Might not want to give them access to your resources. And the last key important thing to know here is in an NSG, the last rule is always a deny all rule here. This is by default. And as you know, surprise, surprise, we want to sort of not give keys to anybody. So they're on default, they're set to as deny all. But you have the ability to change as you configure your VM as well.
nice.
And cool. So yeah. Overall, I like to sort of think of this as the three pillars, right? Touching upon the networking aspect, there are essentially three things to take away on when we are looking at your network networking for your VM, right? The first one is planning your network. You can configure any changes. You can manage your network, open or block traffic via NSGs. And the key takeaway here should be that you have the ability to do so via all three different methods that we touched on earlier. You've got Azure Portal, you've got Azure CLI, you've got PowerShell tools, you've got ARM templates. You can do it via any of those resources. Second thing to know, sorry, Esther, go ahead.
I would just like to stress to a participant that this session is just for Azure Portal. We wouldn't be looking at Azure CLI and Azure PowerShell tool. That's why we have the Azure Learn page. You can always go there and have access to resources that will guide you in this aspect. But for these, we're limiting the session to just Azure Portal.
Great, Carlo, Esther, thank you for that. Right, coming to here, like essentially what we talked about in NSGs, you have the ability to open any port that you may want. By default, all new VMs are locked down. Apps can make outgoing requests, but incoming are sort of denied. That's something that you'll have to sort of configure in your virtual network if that's something that you'd like your VM to be connected with. And lastly, you have the ability to change any sort of firewall rules via NSGs, as we talked about earlier. The key thing to know here is that all of this is sort of controlled by the ports 20 and 21 for active FTP support. So hopefully that gives you an idea what goes behind the scenes on a VM when we talk about the networking aspect.
Now to my favorite part of the session, knowledge check, knowledge check, knowledge check. Please join the chat. The poll is going to be in the chat, and we want you to give us your answers to this question.
Absolutely, Esther. And if we were to do this not virtually, the session would have been something like a classroom environment. Our way of asking you to do questions is basically our way of asking you to raise your hands. Feel free to write your comments, and we'll take checks. And should there be any, we'll try to address them as we go as well. Before moving on, Esther, yeah. So any sort of comments, thoughts on how you think we should go ahead?
We'll just read the question and allow our participants to give their answers, and we go from there.
Great. Let's jump right into it.
Yeah. This is a question, guys. What is the final rule that is applied in every network security group? A, allow all. B, deny all. C, you configure the final rule to your needs. Rishabh, I kind of feel that everyone is going to get this answer. I'm expecting the 100% correct answer on this question.
Absolutely, Esther. This is something we just touched upon. There's a good learning from this question as well. So again, having access, who can access your VM or having access to your VM is a very critical part to deploying a VM. Folks tend to run their business critical applications on it, so we want to be very considerate who has access to it. With that being said, Esther, you want to take a shot or what answer that you may think is the right one?
Well, for me, the answer is deny all because you can go with allow all, right? You don't want to give everyone access to your system or to your network or to your computer resources. Just like you said, it's a house and you have different rooms and you hand the key over, you hand the key over to whoever you deem fit or who is a trusted person. So you don't want to allow all. You can deny all and then go over to allow some people. So I'll go with deny all.
Gotcha.
The good thing is 73% of our participants actually went with that same option, deny all. So another thumbs up, guys.
Great. Yeah, Esther, you're absolutely right. Just a key takeaway here is that it's by default that it's set as deny all, but you have the ability to configure the rule that you want should you choose to. On that note, I will move on to the next. Esther, as you mentioned, deny all is the correct answer. So kudos to you. Looks like you've been following up. Thank you for that.
Before we move to the demo, which is a very, very interesting part of the session, Bishop, there's a question here from Ernesto V. Do the OSDs have a minimum size requirement?
Absolutely. So this is something that's configured via the VM size that you choose. The minimum requirement is often set to, I believe the smallest one that you can pick is the one that comes with A-Series. So I believe the minimum requirement is sort of completed if you choose the direct VM. So to answer your question, they've already sort of taken care of you when you pick up the VM size.
Another question. Thanks, Vishep, for that answer. Another question before we move to the demo, which is a very interesting part of this, is can you deploy custom images with Azure VMs?
Absolutely. So on Azure Marketplace, you have the ability to add your own VM image and deploy VMs according to the VM image that you add to Azure Marketplace. So there's a wonderful sort of documentation on our websites as well, and I highly recommend you check that out too.
Yeah. Thanks, Michael Hearn, for your question. Now we move to the interesting part of this, that is the demo. Before now, we've spoken about the compute part of virtual machines. We also spoke about the storage part, and we talked about the networking part. So those are the three pillars, as Rishabh said, when it comes to virtual machines. Now we're going to the demo. We're going to show you participants firsthand what it's like to create a Windows virtual machine using Azure Portal.
Absolutely, Esther. Before we jump into the demo, Esther, can you sort of give us details on what exactly we'll be doing?
Sure. In the course of the demo, we'll be navigating VM creation via Azure Portal, like we said earlier. We'll be configuring the VM image and basic setting. We'll be also configuring the DICs for the virtual machines. And we would create and attach a data disk, like we said earlier. We'd also configure the networking, which is the interesting part in this, and would finish configurations and just go ahead and deploy the VM using RDP.
Gotcha. So on that note, Esther, should we jump to our browser?
Yes, let's jump to our browser. Just a reminder, like we said earlier, we would be going to the aka.ms/LRN249 page. That's where we have the learning resource for this particular session. You can go ahead and just log into this site or this page so you can move as we're moving. This is a Learn Live session. We can do this together. Or you can just feel free and just watch us do what we're doing, creating a virtual machine using Azure Portal.
Absolutely, yeah. Folks who are welcome to sort of follow us as we do it. If not, just sit back and watch us do it as well. And as we went, this is a Learn Live session, so hopefully we can learn live together. So on that note, Esther, would you like to give us an introduction, what this module exactly is? Maybe a little bit of use case just to sort of get a story running behind our intentions?
Definitely. What's a demo without a use case? So the use case for this particular demo is, imagine you work for a company that does video data processing and pattern analysis. You're building a new prototype platform to process the video from traffic cameras, analyzing trends, and providing actionable data for traffic and road improvements. To improve your algorithm, you have to make arrangements with several new cities to collect the traffic camera data. However, all of this video data are not in the same format, and you have to put them in the same format for analysis and for actionable data. There comes a need to use a virtual machine to do this so that you can use Azure Function to process this into a standard format. I would like to call out that this is just one use case of virtual machines. With Azure Virtual Machines, there are thousands and tons of use cases. Rishabh, do you want to say anything regarding this?
Absolutely, Asir. I think you covered it fantastically. This is just one of the use cases mentioned on the Learn Live module, module number 249 exactly. Yeah, we can think of this as anything, literally, and that's how we tend to utilize our Azure VMs. With further ado, Esther, is it okay if we move on to the next one and just go about showing our viewers what we actually mean about deploying a VM?
Sure. Let's go to the exercise. That's three. If you're on this page, you'll be seeing the same thing we're showing to you, and that's activate sandbox. You might want to ask us, what is a sandbox? Consider sandbox a playground, a place where you can go and have access to Azure resources, even though you're not on the real Azure portal. With the real Azure portal, you need subscription, but consider the sandbox a playground where you have free subscription to gain access to the same resources you would have gained access to if you have your subscription and you are on prod in Azure portal. So what we'll be doing first is activating the sandbox. Rishabh, can you click on the activate sandbox? Once you do this, you would see this progress line bar showing that permission has been verified.
Essentially, for your viewers, Esther, this is just creating a subscription for you and giving you access to Azure resources for 1 hour. You don't need any sort of credentials or anything to use Sandbox. You'll just see that your Sandbox has been activated and your sort of trial period, so to speak, is ready for the next 60 minutes. On that note, yeah. I'll jump to Azure Portal, Esther, if that's okay.
Yeah, that's okay. Let's go to Azure Portal.
Right. So yeah, as we mentioned, Sandbox basically creates a resource for you and you don't have to worry about subscriptions or sort of entering your billing details. So here I am on the Azure portal. Esther, can you walk me through the next steps?
Yeah, the next step is click on the Create a Resource button at the top left corner. This is going to bring us to the screen where you have access to Azure Marketplace. So we'll be clicking on Azure Marketplace, the CO right beside Azure Marketplace.
Yeah, as you can see, it takes a while to load because Azure Marketplace has just so many offerings and so many things to choose from.
Yeah. Like Rishabh said earlier, we'll be going with the Windows Server in creating this particular VM. So Bishop, can you just type in Windows Server?
Sure.
There are tons of options to choose from, but we'll just be choosing the Windows 2019 data center.
Absolutely. So I have options to select which kind of Windows Server as well, and I'll go ahead and pick the Windows Server 2019 data center from the Create button.
Yeah. Like I said earlier, this is the place, this is the playground on the Azure Sandbox, so you don't need to worry about subscription. Automatically, you have your subscription as concierge subscription. For the resource group, we'll go ahead and click the resource group that has been pre-created for us, and that's the Learn. You also have the choice of creating a new resource group if you want to, but that can be done in prod if you have your subscription and you get billed for that. Now we have to give our virtual machine a name, right? We'll be going with the test VP VM2 for this particular session. And you have to pick your region, whatever region that is closest to where you are. For this, we'll be going with US South Central.
Absolutely, Esther. We've got so many data centers all over the world, so we'll be just be picking South Central, if I remember
Yeah,
correctly,
it's
right?
a lot. It's a lot. We'll be
Too many to choose from, so I'll just
so
scroll up
many.
and hopefully, yeah, there it is.
Yeah, that's South Central.
And I think it's okay to leave options and availability zone and availability option as default for the moment. Is that correct, Esther, or do we need to make some configurations here as well?
Yeah, we might need to make some changes. So let's go with no infrastructure redundancy required.
Absolutely. For the purpose of this demo, we'll just stick with this. But please feel free to check out the other options available in availability section as well.
Yeah, the image, as you can see, we have Windows Server 2019 data center on the image because that was what we chose, and automatically that gets on this particular page. For the size, we'll be going with standard DS1 V2. If you can remember during the presentation, Rishabh mentioned the different types of VM sizes we have when it comes to Azure virtual machines, and we can just show what all the sizes are.
Absolutely. We took a while to sort of talk about the buckets of the sizes we have, and all of these can be accessed through the select size option. But the purpose for this demo, we'll just stick with DS1 V2. And I think we select this again. Apologies, I clicked on the select size button. And
Okay.
here, as you made. So just to be clear, this VM comes with one vCPU and 3.5 gigs of memory. It's okay, the pricing is unavailable. That's because we're just using it via a sandbox. What's next, Esther?
Next thing is the username and password, and you want to make sure you remember these details because you would need it in creating or connecting to your virtual machine once it's created.
Absolutely. So I'll just stick with just a simple name. I'll just take mine, if that's okay.
Yeah.
Just because this will help me not forget it when I log in. I'll take a simple password as well. For our viewers, just know that there's a requirement on how the password needs to be made. And I'm sure that this option field gives you information on what exactly that password needs to be. So I've gone ahead and selected that. Essa, should I make any changes to public or inbound or outbound ports?
No changes. We're just going to stick with this because we'll be connecting to a virtual machine using the RDP. So let's just stick with the RDP 3389, if that's fine.
Absolutely. And for our viewers, just know that you have additional options as well. RDP 3389 port gives you sort of a public access if you want to be sort of a little more secure with your workload or application that you intend to put on your VM, feel free to pick up the HTTPS or the SSH options as well.
Okay.
And yeah, Esther, just a quick call out that there's no need to select any sort of licensing option here because they sort of come with the Windows 2019 server that the image that we
Exactly.
picked earlier.
Yes. So we'll be going to the Dix expert, and we'll be showing you how to create and attach a new Dix. Automatically creating your VM comes with a Dix, but we want to attach a new Dix. Maybe we need it for data purposes. So we'll be showing you how to create and attach a new Dix. Can you please click on create and attach a new Dix?
Absolutely. So right here, you'll see that you have the ability to attach new disks. And soon, oops, you can close this tab to save your passwords. All right, Esther, what do I do here?
We'll just go with the default setting.
Okay. And I'll go ahead and click OK. And essentially, again, there are more options that give you an ability to configure it according to your needs. You can go for a larger size as well, but here we'll just stick with the 1 TB option. So I'll go ahead and click OK. You'll see that your disk comes in as an attachment. Shall we move to the networking aspect, Esther?
Yes, definitely. Let's move to the networking aspect.
All right.
And for this, we're just making very little changes. Like we said during the presentation, it's left to you to give access and deny access to whoever based on your preferences. And for this, we'll be creating new on the virtual network. We'll be changing the address range in this. So, Bishop, can we just change this to 172.16.0.0/16?
Absolutely.
Yes.
So what this basically does is it opens access to your IP address.
Okay. And now we'll just, for the subnet name, we'll use default, and the address range for this would be 172.16.1.0/24.
Absolutely. And for folks who are watching, please note that all of this information is sort of provided in the module 249. So if in case that you lost us somewhere around the way, please feel free to follow it via the module as well. Okay. With that, Esther, looks like we are good on the networking aspect. We leave public input ports and output ports as default, and so will we leave the network security group as basic, the default selection for the purpose of this demo.
Sure. The next is the management. Depending on what your preference is, you can go ahead and choose click and unclick. But for us, we'll just be going with the default setting for the purpose of the session.
Thank you. Yeah, again, so many things to choose from. Azure lets you configure your VMs according to your needs. So feel free to have a look at this and understand what each option does. For the purpose of this demo, we'll just move forward. And the same in the advanced section as well. And similarly with the tags, essentially they offer different customization techniques to your VM. And feel free to utilize it as you may seem fit. But for the purpose of this demo, as I said, we'll sort of just skip over it and leave them as defaults.
So we can see that validation is passed, and that's what happens when you try to create a virtual machine. The system actually passes its validation. Once you have that, you can go ahead and create your virtual machine.
Absolutely. And as you can see, we have a couple of warnings already. And that's okay. The first warning is just basically saying that we are not able to retrieve prices and legal term. And this is because we are using the sandbox, as Esther mentioned earlier. And the second one is basically it's saying, oh, your VM's not really secure. Are you sure you want to do that? And that's okay. This is a basic demo, and we're okay to leave it open to the RDP port. So we'll go ahead and click Create.
Great.
And what that does is it basically takes in all the configurations that you submitted, and it will submit your deployment. And basically, you'll get a message on your top right, which will say a deployment is in
Amazing.
progress. For folks who are watching, just know that it takes about a minute or two for your VM to be deployed. While that's happening, Esther, maybe move back and proceed in our presentation.
Yes, let's do that. So now we're going to be talking about connecting to Azure Virtual Machines. We've created our virtual machines like you said during the demo. Now we have to connect to this virtual machine so we can go ahead with our activity. So, Bishop, can you tell us what we have to do connecting
Absolutely,
to
yes,
Azure
sir.
Virtual Machines?
Yes, absolutely. Thanks a lot. And as we talked, right, we've covered all the three pillars. We've configured it. We've launched our VM. Now, what's next, right? The next step is I created my VM, but how do I connect to it? The next step is obviously connecting to it, right? Again, there are a lot of different ways that you can connect to your VM. So to name a few, you've got a remote desktop protocol, RDP, which will be showing you how to do it via RDP today. Additionally, you also have the ability to launch your custom scripts, connecting it over SSH or connecting it over Windows CLI, PowerShell, you name it. You have sort of those developer-friendly methods as well. And lastly, you have the ability to create your own custom VM images. I remember, Esther, you asked me a question from one of our viewers as well. This is how you can do it by adding your custom VM images as well. Lastly, yeah, what is RDP? I'll sort of skip over this because RDP is quite a simple thing. It's essentially a GUI which helps you connect via a network to your VM. And I'll sort of show that in my demo real quick. I know we are sort of catching up on time, so I'll try to quickly give you information on RDP, right? So with the public IP, we can communicate with the other VMs over the internet. One thing to be aware of is public IP address in Azure is they're sort of dynamically allocated. So if you start a VM, it will have an IP address. And if you turn it off and maybe start up again, the IP address might change. So be careful when you're trying to configure VMs. And once you launch and shut them down, make sure to collect IP addresses as they generate. Right, you might see a few publisher warnings and certification warnings, and I'll show you. Just know that it's okay to see them because we'll be downloading an executable file from Azure portal. Azure is a trusted environment. For the purpose of this demo, I'll also even go ahead and show you what we face. Just know that that's nothing to be worried about, and it's okay to hit okay when I'll show in my demo as well.
Bishop, I have a question. Do I need to download the RDP application or software to be able to execute the RDP file?
Absolutely. Great question, Esther. And how would I answer it by showing it to you when I conduct my demo?
Exactly.
All right, Esther, would you like to give us a quick intro into what we are seeing in the demo?
So for the next demo, we would be looking at downloading the RDP file, connecting to the Windows VM via RDP connection, and initializing our data disk. This will be interesting.
Thanks a lot, Esther. So on that note, I will jump to my browser, if that's OK.
Yeah, that's fine.
And here we're back on the VM that we just launched. As you can see, some good news that our deployment is complete. Let's go ahead and click on the Go to Resource button. And as soon as you do that, you will have access to all your configurations that you chose that Esther wonderfully guided us towards completing. On the top left, you can see this wonderful button called Connect. So let's go ahead and click that. And again, as I mentioned, many ways to do that, but we'll be choosing RDP here. Again, so as you see, our dynamically generated IP address is here. A port number is also assigned that we selected earlier. So let's go ahead and address Esther's previous question. It says download RDP file. So let's go ahead and click that. And you can see on my screen that there is an automatically downloaded file executable with an extension of a .rdp. So let's go ahead and open that. Now, as soon as you do that, as I mentioned, you'll see a couple of warnings. And just know that it's OK to just go ahead and click Connect. And once you do that, if you have a Windows computer like me, it might want to sort of just jump to your it might just want to sort of pick up your desktop credentials and try to log you in with that. But let's go ahead and click on More Choices and say Use Different Account. And here, you want to sort of enter the VM credentials that we selected in our initial VM configurations. So if I remember correctly, we selected
Rishabh Verma.
Yep, just my name and my super long password, which adheres to the process. So let's go ahead and click OK. And we will see another warning, which is basically saying, hey, are you sure you trust the certificates? Yes, I do. So let's go ahead and click Yes. And there we go. This launches our VM, and I will sort of get it on the screen I'm sharing. A new sort of graphical user interface will open up. What this window is essentially your gateway to a new computer, an Azure VM. So ta-da. And
ta-da.
And this is the part where I like to think is basically what we've done is we've turned on a computer, right? So give it a second. If you remember, like just like with any computer, you like to give it a second as soon as you turn it on. And basically, it's going to run some of the few applications that it runs as soon as it boots up. So as you can see, our server manager dashboard has sort of opened up. It's asking me a few questions about our networking. So let's just go ahead and hit yes. And it's OK to close this for the purpose of this demo. But just know that you have the ability and a dashboard to view and manage your Windows 2019 server, the image that we selected for this VM. So I'll go ahead and close this. And just to give you a quick snapshot on what I see on the my computer, basically the configurations of this PC, right? Like we spend so much time about talking about the configurations. We attach to disk, right? That's where is my disk, if you folks might be wondering, right? Right, Esther, is that something you're wondering about? Where did our 1 terabyte disk went away?
Yes, exactly. I was thinking, I was expecting to see the 1 terabyte disks on this PC, but it's nowhere to be found.
Absolutely. And before I jump right into it, one of our other sort of viewers looked at asked the question is how much of the data is reserved for the OS, right? And I think you can answer it via just by looking at the C drive content right here. So out of the 126 GB available to me on the Windows C drive, only 117, like 117 GB is free. The rest of it is given to the OS. So I hope that gives you a clearer answer. So about exactly like 9 GB is sort of stopped saved for your OS. On that note, I will try to sort of address Esther's question on where is my, oh, this is mine. Excuse me. This usually happens when you run a Windows. Sorry. What happened was my computer's Windows Home opened up rather than the VMs. So this happens when you RDP. But I will go ahead and go to Computer Manager.
Management, yeah.
Yep. This is an inbuilt application that lets you sort of monitor your VM resources. My apologies for the viewers. I know this page is a little small, but just know that there was no other way to sort of increase the size into it. But basically, allow me to sort of narrate over what I'm doing. Here, I'm going to go ahead and click on the Disk Management tab. And in that, computer management is kind of smart, right? It's basically saying like, hey, you configured your VM with a disk, but you're not really using it. Do you want to go ahead and use it? And all we have to do is, yes, I do. And an important thing to note here is there is this one big black bar which says, oh, your 1 terabyte disk that you attached to your VM, it's actually unallocated. Do you want to go ahead and allocate it? And the way to do it is you go ahead and click New Simple Volume. There's a simple setup wizard that shows up. Just go ahead and click next. Just next. It's okay to leave it as default. You have the ability to give a name to the disk drive as well. Again, okay to stick with the default configurations here. And finally, we go ahead and click finish. Now you can see that it's basically showing that it's formatting right now. And then it takes just about a second to format. And right away, it says your drive is healthy and ready to be partitioned. And I think we can even go ahead and view that on our PC. So now, Esther, hopefully this answers your question. We've got this one beautiful 1 terabyte SSD drive that we attach to our VM, and it's available for us to use. All right, so that essentially concludes our demo. Let's go ahead and close it. I will shut it down. And as soon as you close your demo, basically your VM is closed off. And again, if you were to sort of connect it via RDP, you can do so by again following through the process that we just showcased it to you.
Thank you, Rishabh, for that wonderful illustration of connecting using RDP. Now to another favorite part of the session, that is the knowledge check. So, guys, please go head over to the chat. You'll see a poll with a question. We want your answers to this question. This is our last knowledge check for the session.
Absolutely, Esther. And I hope our viewers are sort of following us so far. It's definitely been a fun ride going ahead and showcasing a demo to you folks. But we'll take a pause and try to answer your questions as much as we can. I see a question from George S. So, hey, George, thanks a lot for writing a question. I believe his question is, can you please elaborate a little bit about Windows Virtual Desktop? Right, so WVD is a fantastic sort of application or a service provided by Microsoft. Essentially, the way I like to think of this is it lets you use resources on top of your current computer. So just like how I showed you that you can launch a VM and sort of connect to it via this wonderful GUI and utilize another Windows VM, that's exactly what a Windows Virtual Desktop is having access to a virtual, having access to a new desktop, and based on the sort of configurations that you choose virtually, right? So the name is quite intuitive as well. I like to sort of think of this as like, if I may sort of elaborate and give an example on how to use a Windows Virtual Desktop is, imagine you're at a company and you've got sort of 10 people working in your branch, right? And you want to give access computers to them, but not, you don't want to actually buy sort of expensive developer grade CPUs for them, right? Or just laptops for them. What you do is maybe you can give them a sort of a not so computationally expensive computer and ask them to use a more sort of computationally expensive Windows Virtual Desktop and have the resources provided, the computational resources provided to them via that resource. So just, you know, like a virtual connection to a desktop, which you have an ability to configure over. So hopefully, George, that answers your question. On that note, Esther, should we jump into the last question? We're about time as well.
Yes, let's do that. The question is, when creating a Windows virtual machine in Azure, which ports would you open using the inbound port rules in order to allow remote desktop access? A, HTTPS. B, SSH22, C, LDP3389. So guys, please add over to the chat and let's know what your answer is. Rishab, what do you think the answer to this is? Is it HTTPS or SSH?
That's another great question, Esther. And we sort of walked over this, and this is another sort of important takeaway to note here. So for inbound ports, we essentially tend to not use HTTPS. HTTPS is, as you may know, it's like a hyperlink sort of, and basically the S in the end stands for security. So you don't want to just give it an inbound port, and that's how you control your, basically a layer of security over your port. So is SSH. The port number 22 is also sort of reserved for that. For inbound port rules, we always sort of allow remote desktop access via RDP, which is port number 3389. So I believe the answer is going to be C.
Yeah, it's amazing. The participants, 95% of participants actually chose out the P3389. So another thumbs up that shows that you guys have been following us and we appreciate that.
Absolutely, yes, sir. And as you can see, that is the correct option. Whew. On that note, I hope our viewers have been enjoying the session as much as we have. It's a long 75-minute session, but we've definitely enjoyed it so far. Esther, would you like to summarize all our learnings today?
Definitely. It's been a long ride. So thank you, guys, for sticking with us right to the end. We hope in the course of the session, you've been able to learn how to create a Windows VM in the Azure portal. We hope you can connect to the VM over LDP now. And we also hope that you can configure virtual hardware and connectivity. So thank you for staying with us all this while. And over to you, Rishab. What should we be expecting after the session?
Absolutely, Esther. We've got a wonderful set of resources offered with our, I'll just go ahead and open the, yeah. So essentially, wonderful set of resources offered to all the folks who are watching our session today. We just covered one of the many modules. I think, Esther, you touched upon how many modules we have available in our Azure Learn website. So please feel free to check those out. Additionally, there's going to be a survey after our session as well. Please take a minute and go ahead and give your feedback on the survey. It will only help us sort of present to you folks a little better. And I'm sure Esther and I can sort of take that learning and utilize it towards our next session. On that note, I will move on to the next slide. A little sort of fun side note thing is that, you know, please sign up for the Microsoft Ignite Cloud Skills Challenge today through the Microsoft Ignite experience, learn experience in the learning zone. Complete any of or all of the 7 collections to earn a free certificate through the exam. The challenge is live and runs through March 30th. This is a wonderful shout out for those who are interested. A collection available across a variety of topics and will help you prepare for certifications for Microsoft 365, Azure Admin, Azure Data Scientist, Team Admin, Data Analyst, identity and information protection, security operation analysis. So essentially, you know, so many things to give you certifications on. If that's something of interest to you, please go ahead and do that. And a key thing to note here is there is no need to purchase anything. It's open only for sort of participants above the age of 18. So it's a free way of getting a certification, and I highly encourage you folks to go ahead and participate. And on the last note is, again, you know, a big thank you for all you folks to be with us today. Esther, I'm certain that you're as grateful as I am today for being to have this opportunity to present on Ignite. Just know that
definitely.
Absolutely. And again, yeah, thank you so much for joining for us today. And these live learn Ignite sessions are, of course, a lot of fun. I really hope this was this would have been maybe an in-person session where we would have been next to you in a classroom, but hopefully the virtual session was comparable as well. Let's just say that that's not all. All you need to know is we're excited to announce that starting March 15th, there's going to be a Learn Live is going to be available on a new weekly live streaming show over Learn TV. So you can see sort of sessions like this on TV and cover sort of any Learn module that you might be interested in and have access to open Q&A questions that like we did today. And more importantly, like we're going to be starting the show by looking at Azure SQL fundamentals, but with over, as I said, so many things to cover over in Azure, about more than 2,000 topics in Azure, Microsoft Learn already. We'll be covering them in a sort of a progressive manner and hopefully going forward. So please come join us every Monday on Learn TV starting March 15th. So please go ahead and mark your calendars and come join in, and hopefully we can continue to educate folks. On that note, this brings me to my last slide. I believe we've got a couple more minutes, so hopefully we can take a few questions in the end as well. I'll try to see if I can see any questions. So I see a question from Michael N. Hey, Michael, thanks a lot for writing a question. So I believe your question is, what is the difference between Azure VM and Windows Virtual Desktops? So this is a fantastic question. And Michael, there is actually a union over them, right? Azure VMs can work as Windows Virtual Desktops, but Windows Virtual Desktops cannot work as Azure VMs, right? So let me give you an example by taking a use case, right? What if I want to virtualize a Linux environment? Windows Virtual Desktops will not allow me to do that, right? And then the same thing with Windows Virtual Desktops, I can sort of basically have nested virtualization. What that means is I can virtualize an environment inside a virtualized environment. So it's kind of like Inception. Azure VMs also allow that, although that service is not available to all our Azure VM sizes. For example, B-Series VMs does not have that. So be careful when you're picking up your workload. So yeah, hopefully that gives you an idea. The names are quite intuitive. WVD is essentially a Windows virtualized desktop. Azure VMs are sort of this gateway to a whole world where Windows is not your stopping factor, right? Like you can deploy Red Hat services, you can deploy Ubuntu services, you can deploy Windows services. It's just one of the many things that VWD is just one of the many things that come with Azure VMs. So hopefully that answers your question. And I will think looks like that is all the questions we have today.
Yeah.
On that, and not I think we'll say our goodbye now, Esther. So a big thank you again, folks. We've got a sort of a large audience for this session, and we're very thankful. Esther, I hope you enjoyed the session as much as I did.
Rishabh, this was an insightful session and it was also fun. So thanks guys for joining us, from wherever in the world you're joining and watching the session. We want to say thank you, and we hope that you continue using Learn Live.
Absolutely, folks. I hope this was as comparable as an in-person session. We, again, on a note that I'll leave you is, I really wish this was conducted more in a classroom manner, but here we are. The world around us has changed. Hopefully, we were able to sort of give you some good takeaways and maybe spark that curiosity towards learning about Azure VMs. On that note, thank you so much and have a great day. Until next time.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye, folks.